This is Polykill, where two men, outnumbered by their games and at war with time, undertake the quest of defeating their lengthy backlogs. Please adjust your seat and prepare your ears for the banter of your hosts, Jake and Travis.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to an all-new episode of the Polykill Podcast. As always, we are your hosts. To my right is Jake. He plays all the contemporary games, doesn't believe in giraffes, collects vinyl, and you can find him on social media at the McAxel.
That's right, I don't. Giraffes are a figmentation of your imagination. To my left, as always, is Trav Plays Games. He plays classic games, retro games, collects retro games, and his saliva has a boiling point three times higher than water.
Wow, why is that?
That's just all humans.
All the salt?
I don't know.
I don't know either. That's a fun fact, though. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You can find our show on social media at Polykill. Now, if you're new to the show, what Jake and I do is we try to beat video games. That's what Polykilling's all about.
Getting those multi-kills.
And so the way the show operates is we talk about all the games that we've picked up, played, beaten, or are playing on or plan to play, et cetera, and then we close out the episode with a good old hearty discussion, and we have Quite the discussion. This is going to be a very hearty, meaty episode.
Very girthy at the base.
So there's some stuff that we need to get out of the way first. A couple polyblogs were released this past week by our good friend Brian. You can find him on Twitter at HokeyBriz. His first one was the what he calls the Brizzy Awards of 2017. Of course, this episode is going to be about all our superlatives, and Brian shared his there on the blog. And be sure to check that. He worked hard on it. It's really good.
Lovely stuff.
He's one about opening things up for discussion, so hit him up there, give him some feedback, talk to him about his selections, and tell him what you think.
Yeah.
The other one is he recently went to Disney Springs Orlando and took part in the Star Wars quote-unquote hyper-reality attraction there and had a lot of feedback about it. Sounds like he really enjoyed it, but if you know, Brian being the VR aficionado of our group, for sure. Had a lot to say about it. It's very intriguing stuff, and if you are making your way down to Orlando anytime soon, reading this article might give you a good reason to go check that out. So
yes, it might.
Check out that blog first. You can find both of those blogs over on polykill.com. And then that takes us into the Photoshop contest that we're doing now. If you follow us on Twitter, you've probably seen us retweet a bunch of these magnificent bastards. People are hard at work on this, Jake.
It's pretty great. I've been following the old hashtag, which is
Polykill Contest.
Polykill Contest. And man, some of these are hilarious, and for different reasons. All of them are unique and special little snowflakes that I adore. Some of them are funnier than others, though.
That is true. So you have until January 10th to Photoshop our face from any video of Polykill that you can find onto any image that you want. And, well, of course, it's got to be safe for Twitter. And then send it out with that hashtag Polykill Contest. Winners will receive a $60 game and a Polykill mug. Runners up will receive a Polykill t-shirt. You don't want to miss out on that. So use that Polykill Contest hashtag to submit your Photoshops via Twitter. And then, once again, on this previously on segment, we will break away from our mics and make some faces and do weird stuff so that you guys can get as creative as possible. I have not been disappointed. I want to see more of these things. These are great. This is the best idea that we've had. And you need to, you know, people are putting them out. So you need to go, first of all, go check out the hashtag, see what everybody else has done, and then try to top it.
Exactly.
All right. So last week we released Off Kilter 13. Close calls. It was a close call. It almost landed on Christmas. We pushed it back a couple days.
Yeah, just to, you know, he didn't want to release it into the void that is the day of Christmas. So we pushed it back a couple of days. So it released this past Wednesday. So it's going to put the gap between these two episodes a little narrower than usual. However, I'm sure you've already listened to it and already loved it and are, you know, just salivating for more Polykill. So here we are.
We did release it right there in that holiday taint. Nobody knows what time it is, what day it is, where they're supposed to be, where they're going. Yeah. And so it might have been lost in the holiday madness, but be sure to check it out. Personally, it was probably my favorite Off Kilter.
Really?
There were some great submissions on that episode.
I mean, I'm not surprised because it was a fun episode, but it's shocking. You know, we've done 13 of those, and it's your favorite.
That's absolutely my favorite. So
that's
please
cool.
Be sure to check it out. Now, setting up that next Off Kilter, which they release about a month apart, so you got a little bit of time, but don't wait. What we want to do for this one is we're definitely, as we do for all Off-Kilters, we're going to need your help.
We will.
We want you to submit your odd, weird, funny, strange, or ridiculous news stories. The more local to you, the better, because we want to be able to have something that's sort of unique and people couldn't find on their own or weren't privy to otherwise. Find those, send us the link, and then what we'll do is we'll sort of paraphrase that down and read them on the show and sort of talk about all these ridiculous things. News stories can go any number of directions, so really it's wide open, but anything you think that's interesting, or funny or weird or stupid. Stupid criminals, that's always a good one.
Always fun.
Send those in. All right. And they don't have to be recent. I'll say that.
Right.
Okay. So now, got all that out of the way.
Announcement's over.
Announcement's over.
It's time for business meat.
It's time for the meat of the business. Recent pickups and on the radar. There's no games. I just said the way there's no games on our radar.
Not at all.
There's no,
like, it's the, I don't know, it's the dry spell. It's the, you know, the time between hookups, I guess.
It is the game release taint.
It is. Sure.
There's nothing. Yeah. Nothing happening.
Not a lot going on.
But we, you know, it being the holidays, of course, we were gifted some games or picked up some games through holiday sales.
Sure.
Jake, what have you picked up?
I snagged a few. Now, I'll be honest, Xbox had a fantastic sale. But I only saw one game in there that I was even remotely interested in, and that's kind of weird because there's, I don't know, something like 600 games on sale on the Xbox store during this holiday season, and honestly, there's none of them that I was like, yeah, I really want that, aside from one, and that was, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Jotun, but it's a little... well, I don't know if it's little. It was inexpensive. It was like $4, but it's a kind of like a slightly isometric action game, maybe some RPG elements, all hand-drawn animation set in this mystical Viking world. And it's just, it feels a little I don't know, maybe like Titan Souls a bit, but maybe not quite that difficult. But you just go through these corridors and get to the end and fight these big bosses and earn runes to impress the gods. And it's really quite charming. So if you see that one, I would recommend picking it up based on my hour and a half with it so far.
Yeah, and if you're searching it out, it's Jotun in case the pronunciation didn't make that obvious.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also snagged two from the PlayStation Store, one of which was Pyre, which is from Supergiant Games, which are one of my favorite developers. They made the hits, which are Transistor and Bastion. Both of those games are real standouts. Love the music from both of those games. Darren Korb comes back to Supergiant, or works again with Supergiant to do the music for Pyre. It's kind of like this weird hybrid of, you know, RPGs and basketball and set in this fantasy world. I'm really excited to play it. It was half off, so I couldn't pass it up. One of those games that I just needed in my library. The last of which is a game that I heard very little fanfare about, only from a couple of people that are not even really in the gaming world as often as others. But it's called Observer, and it stars Rutger Hauer, and it's like this... I really don't know.
Cyberpunk-y?
Yeah, it's like cyberpunk, Blade Runner, mind hacker, mind fuck kind of game. Mm. Seems pretty wild, pretty out there. So I'm pretty excited to play that. Probably one of those that we maybe bro up.
Oh, yeah.
Snagged it on the PlayStation. It was on sale both on Xbox and PlayStation, but cheaper on PlayStation, so that's why I bought it there.
Cool. That sounds like a neat little crop of games.
Yeah.
Three games that aren't, you know...
probably not huge.
Yeah, not huge. Certainly not overwhelmingly popular, but interesting.
Yeah.
For me, I was gifted from my partner in crime over here, Persona 5.
Yeah.
A little holiday gift there. He knowing that I don't often finish turn-based RPGs, although there's an update on that later in the show, I'm very excited to play this. I've actually put a little bit of time into it so far, and it's pretty good. Pretty good. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And then my wife, I have a sort of a revolving Google Doc of my... I'm much like a child in the way that I seek out games, and then I have a Christmas holiday or Christmas and birthday list that I make sure that my wife is very aware of.
Gotcha.
And I often don't receive games from that list. A lot of them are the high dollar ones, but they're ones that I desperately want to have because I want to play them soon. Things like Earthbound and things like you know, some of the Super Bomberman 2 or Bomberman 2 rather for NES, like some games that are a little higher dollar that, you know, if someone gifted it to me, it'd be pretty sweet. And of course everyone's going to say, hey, you can play these on the eShop or whatever. It's like, I'm also a collector. Okay, calm down. I want these in my possession.
Right.
Neither here nor there. My wife surprised me. She got on that list, actually, and gifted me Brain Lord for the Super Nintendo. Not a high-dollar game, not a rare game, but a fun action RPG, but she got it CIB, complete in the box. Really good copy of it, so that was very awesome.
Quite nice.
The surprise.
Very nice.
Put a little time into it, but so far it's pretty good. But that was my Christmas right there, were those two games.
Booyah.
All right, so those are the games that we've picked up, we'll probably play them someday. You'll hear about them again on this show.
Yeah, they'll come back around.
All right, it's time to make some faces while we tell everyone what happened last time.
Let's check it out.
Previously on Polykill, there were no hot Jakes due to the dearth of gaming news, but Jake and Trav harp on all the games they've played, including Madden 18, Chrono Trigger, and Assassin's Creed Origins. Trav has issues with Dragon Age Inquisition while Jake shares some fun tales from his time in PUBG. Experiences with modern RPGs and their thoughts on the top 10 RPGs from this era serves as the topic of discussion.
And we're back. Yeah, we're back. That was fun and ridiculous. I enjoyed that.
A lot of stupid happened just then.
So if you, again, you want to go check out that Polykill video, you'll get to see all of that. And you can crop those faces out, slap them on something ridiculous, and make everyone laugh. So far, it's been a hoot.
Hoot and a half.
We would do Hot Jakes, but for the second episode in a row, we found that there's really no worthy news topics.
It's kind of a dearth. One thing I'll mention really quick, most of you probably already know this, but not really a Hot Jake, but something interesting is that Amazon just put up 18 blank Switch game listings. So the 18 new Switch titles, none of which actually have a title, they're just placeholders, probably in anticipation of the January Direct. So we might have an update on that next episode.
Very cool. That sounds exciting. If you are a Switch owner, you have a lot to look forward to. All right. So games that we have completed or retired. This has been otherwise called the Just Beat It section of the show. We're going to start out with the ones that we just beat.
Correct.
Jake, I beat 6 games over this holiday season.
That's
of course,
great.
Holiday season being a great time to catch up on the old backlog-a-roo.
It is. It absolutely is. You know, you have fewer distractions. Bedtime is one of those things that you just kind of forget about getting up. You know, who cares when you get up? So it's been a nice time to just sort of just sink teeth into some of these games and see what we can do with them.
And that will be evident in the hashtag Just Beat It section. It looks like everybody had the exact same
process we did.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. I'll start out with one that I absolutely adored, and it was gifted to us by one of our favorite listeners, Frankie, over at Viper Strike. He's also part of the Short Pause podcast. He gave me a code for Cuphead there on the Xbox One, or Cuphead, I think is maybe how you pronounce it.
Cuphead.
Sure. No. Absolutely great game. Now, I know I didn't actually watch the Game Awards. For whatever reason, I was just kind of relegated to catching highlights to that. But I know that it was nominated for a lot of...
won a lot of things.
Won a lot of things and was also nominated for even more. I get it, man. It was an absolute fantastic game. I loved it so much. Everything, you know, everyone's beat to death this art style, the rubber hose art style. Sure, that's amazing that you can actually play a game with that sort of animation. Music, obviously astounding.
Great.
Fitting, very fitting for the game. Gameplay-wise, man, though, so fucking good. For a person like me that likes those retro games, likes the platformers, likes the shooters, which this game does a really good job of sort of combining both of those genres into one solid game.
Yeah.
And I actually beat it, which surprised me, because
that's impressive.
While I love games that are that difficult, I'm often not one to beat some of the more difficult ones. I love them and I have fond memories of things like Ninja Gaiden and Battletoads. Those are not games I can beat, but actually beating Cuphead felt pretty fucking good.
No doubt.
And actually, probably one of my most liked tweets was I tweeted out to, I think it's Studio MDHR.
MDHR. Yep.
And said, you know, thanks for this game. This was amazing, with a little screenshot in typical hashtag Just Beat It Fair. And they liked it and it got a bunch of likes and it just felt good to be recognized for, you know, if you could cut the head off of Cuphead and mount it onto your wall, I think I would do it. That'd be like, that'd be my 16-point buck, you know?
Gotcha.
It felt good.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, what about you? Did you beat anything?
I did. I hold on. So as you guys know, I have been not toiling away, but striving away toward the conclusion of Assassin's Seed Origins.
Oh, the Seed now. What's that?
Assassin's Creed Origins.
Okay.
This is a game that I picked up, I guess it was around Thanksgiving, and sort of been plotting my way through it. A few updates here and there. Happy to say I finally completed the game, the main story.
You put this one away rather quickly.
I mean, considering the amount of hours that I put into the game, I think it says a lot about how much I enjoyed the game, because it was around 35 hours of actual, you know, game time. Obviously, some time between saves, probably a little more than that. But I really, really, really enjoyed this game, and I think I said it on Facebook. I may have said it on Twitter. But, you know, last year I was like shouting to the heavens about Titanfall 2. This year I'm going, that game for me is going to be Assassin's Creed Origins. I think a lot of people are, I don't know, still overlooking it, not seeing a lot about it, which is a shame, because I really think it's, it's technically a brilliant game, especially if you've got some, you know, more advanced consoles, seeing that HDR, seeing that 4K resolution, and that draw distance is awesome. But lovely game, and I have to say that the story in this game, in not necessarily the characters, which were really good. I really enjoyed the characters, but just the way the things take turns, especially toward the end, is just really, really good and really human and really smart and grown up, and I really appreciated it.
It sounds like you really enjoyed it. I think a lot of the reason that it's not being talked about, people are hesitant because it has Assassin's Creed right there in the title.
Don't be hesitant. It's an entirely different game.
And people are still burnt out. I don't think, you know, even the Assassin's Creeds that people had issue with, aside from, let's say, 3, but even those last, three or four, I kind of, you know, that sort of had those throwaway names like Rogue and Unity and some of those that don't really stick with you. But in general, they weren't bad games. They were just like buggy or glitchy, or they had,
or just a recycling,
right? But you're saying that they've taken this, you know, tried and true Assassin's Creed recipe, sort of flipped it on its head a little bit. It's still an Assassin's Creed game, but it's also different enough that
in many ways it feels like a reboot.
Right, which is probably why it's called Origins. Kind of starting fresh. Yeah. So that's good. I'm glad you liked it. And like you said, it's not catching.
It just doesn't seem to be, you know, and maybe there's a lot of people out there that I'm just not talking to or seeing, stuff from, but it just does seem like it's one of those that's quietly under the radar. But a lot of people do appreciate because I watch the Digital Foundry's like technical, achievements of the year video, and it was number 2. So like they love how the game was put together and the techniques to, make it as pretty as it is. And, it's a good game.
Well, maybe as backlogging goes, what we see a lot of times is if it's not a game that people feel like they need to play right here, right now, we'll start to see it crop up on the hashtag Just Beat It's here in a couple weeks when people get around to it.
You should all play it.
I got a quick one I'll get out of the way here. Mario Bros. On the NES now. It's an arcade game.
Mario Bros.
Sort of loops. It's the old one where you're down in the sewer and you got to,
smash
survive.
The POW button thing.
Yeah, you smash the POW button. You're shooting crabs and weird bugs and other turtles and that kind of thing. Well, it loops after stage 13. I made it to 33 and thought, hey, I think I consider that a win. No credits on an arcade game like that, but I considered it a win. I'll move on quickly to another one that I played. Now, it's sort of a predecessor to the Cartridge Club Game of the Month for December, which was We Love Katamari. I played Katamari Damacy there on PS2.
How'd you like that?
Didn't know what I was getting into. I'll tell you what, though, it's fucking crack.
Yeah?
And it was made by people who also loved crack.
Very nice.
Have you played any of them?
No. No, I'm complete Katamari virgin.
You don't know anything about it, though.
I mean, a little.
Okay, you're a ball. You have a little guy who's pushing a ball around, and you're collecting junk and turning them into stars.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
It's oddly addicting because there's nothing like it.
Sure. Yeah.
I can't get that experience out of any other game. I don't know if it's actually. I don't know if I was having fun or if I was just curious of where this was going, and it goes nowhere. But it's still fun. And I got credits on it. You do. I mean, it's ridiculously fun. You push it around. So sometimes there's these stages, and you start out the ball. You got to pick up little things, so you run your ball in little things, and it sort of sticks. And like imagine the ball sticky, and you're picking up random shit. Like you're picking up Nintendo consoles, which this is a PS2 game, but there's like for sure an NES console on the ground. You can pick up like sushi. You can pick up shoes, hammers, and then as you make the ball bigger, then suddenly you can pick up bigger things like furniture or. Occasionally people, and then eventually you get so big you're picking up buildings and entire towns, and then you have to do all this within a time frame. So you sort of have to, there's some strategy that you want to get to the small things as quick as possible and get to that next tier of things. And I don't know why I love it so much, but I'm sure people that have played, We Love Katamari and some of the other ones that have come out are more than familiar with how the game works.
Cool.
I played, I think it's the first one. I don't know, maybe it was the first one to come to the States. I'm not real sure about the lineage there, but
interesting.
Fun time. It was pretty cheap too. It was like $10 to pick up. So
sweet.
So go out and grab it. Did you beat anything else?
I did. I beat Uncharted Lost Legacy. Uncharted Lost Legacy. If you guys remember, I picked this game up earlier in the year, shortly after release, and I'm trying to remember when that was, and I can't. However, it is a sort of a smaller Uncharted experience. It was $40 release at retail, starring Chloe and Nadine, both of which are Uncharted characters. Nadine showing up most recently in Uncharted 4, I think, for the first time. And then, of course, Chloe being there for Uncharted 2. Having these two together was amazing. The character interactions, just so good. I mean, nice arcs for both of them. Nice. You can't really get a game prettier than these last two Uncharted games. It's insane how pretty they are. Every time I look at the game, I'm like, how are you doing this? A lot of people probably thought that the Lost Legacy was kind of a throwaway or maybe just a quick tack on. But I really do think it's one of the more interesting Uncharted Adventures, because it's a little more concise and you kind of don't lose sight of that whole globe-trotting thing that you can in some Uncharted games, where it's like, okay, why am I here? Sometimes you kind of get that feeling. Mm-hmm. With this one, you know, it's about a 7-hour, 8-hour experience, so everything's a little more concise. You have a little more streamlined, clear vision of what the purpose of the game is. And it's just that tried and true Uncharted, you know, formula, which is a little dated, frankly. Climb stuff and shoot stuff. That's very, I mean, that's, we've been doing that since PS2 days, I guess. But mm-hmm. I love it, and thoroughly enjoyed my time with it.
Good to hear. Yeah. Because it's a shorter beat, I think a lot of people have been getting around to it, which is, what do you think about that? Do you think you're okay with those kinds of games being 7 or 8 hours? I mean, do they need to be 20, 23 hours?
No, not at all. Like, I mean, I, Uncharted 4, I certainly did enjoy the game. And I think the draw to that game was it was the conclusion to Nathan Drake's story. And sort of, you know, you've been along this ride with him since literally the launch of the PS3. So it's, you know, following this character. But with this one, it was, you know, kind of like sideline characters that you didn't know as much about. You got to learn about them while playing a good game. And it just, if it was longer, it would definitely felt a little more protracted just for its own sake.
So is this, I mean, maybe this has come out in other ways. I haven't been keeping up with it because I'm sort of saving the Uncharteds for like a Nathan Drake collection kind of thing, which I recently picked up.
You did, yeah.
Is this a passing of the torch to these other characters?
I think so. And I kind of hope so, frankly, because I really love the character of Chloe Fraser. I think she's one of the more interesting characters in the Uncharted series, and she's brilliantly portrayed by Claudia Black. Just this scrappy, feisty, but not like arrogant, I mean, not to an annoying point, character who's, you know, just a lot of fun to watch and listen to, and watching her interactions. And, you know, it's just sort of fun sometimes, because a lot of the games that I play, and I don't know about you, I don't think you play as many like this, but where you have to make so many decisions about what your character is going to be. You know, sometimes like the Walking Dead games, or maybe an RPG where you're just kind of an avatar, you kind of have to be on a control of that. This is fun to just sort of play between character development. Like, I'm going to run around and shoot things and swing on things and solve a puzzle, but how the character develops is completely up to the game. It's kind of a nice break.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You sure did.
I finished a game that you gifted me a couple months ago.
Hmm.
999.
Oh.
Nine.
Or as I call it in Germany. No.
No, of course. nine doors, nine persons, nine rooms, I believe. Maybe not in that order.
Something like that.
Pretty fun game there on the DS, part of the Nonary game series.
Mm.
I really, 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 really enjoyed this game.
Awesome.
Until the very end.
Nice.
The one stink I have with it is that you can do everything right and win the game, or, you know,
Complete it,
and not get the final ending until you go back through and do everything the wrong way. And by that, there's certain doors you can choose, certain routes you can take, certain people you can sort of align with throughout the game.
Mm.
And it wants you to see both sides of that before it gives you the official ending. And I didn't really feel like going back through it. Now, sure, you get, you know, some different scoop, and you get a different perspective, and there's different puzzles. But I did everything right the first time. I feel like I should get credit. I'm counting it.
Well, of course.
Fuck you if you don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it.
Do it.
So, but I still have to recommend it. I mean, if you're the kind of person that wants to get every ounce and every minute out of every game, go through and play it twice and love every second of it. For me, I have way too many other games that I need to get to, and I felt like I got the perfect experience out of my first playthrough for it.
Sweet.
So, I did enjoy it quite a bit. I'm going to pass it off to Brian. He was interested in it. So,
oh, cool.
So, Brian, do everything wrong the first time.
Yes.
And then go back through and beat it. There's a game that you and I beat together.
It is.
We just beat it
finally.
Together. Finally.
We beat it together in a room together. Just beat it.
We beat it for almost a year. I thought it felt longer, but when we looked at it, it was a little bit less than a year. I think it was last January when we finished Metroid 2
right.
There on the Super Game Boy.
Right.
And then
the last one we bro-opped.
Yes, indeed. And, man, Super Metroid, what a great game.
Crazy. Crazy good game. It's one of those that it's always kind of like right there on the edge of feeling like slightly imbalanced, but you always feel like that when you screw up, it still is your fault somehow. You never feel completely cheesed. In the first Metroid, the OG on NES, I always felt like it was completely unfair. Like,
very brutal game.
Very brutal, very, you know, just, you know, top heavy in terms of difficulty. This one didn't feel that way as much to me. A little more freedom in how you could approach things, and I don't know. I just felt a little more powerful, which was cool.
I often wonder though if our experience was our experiences tainted with the previous Metroids built us up to be decent at Super Metroid.
It's possible, you know, because we did, you know, play through both of them.
Yeah, I feel like if we went back to the OG now, we'd have a better respect for it because we sort of understand how Metroid is communicating to you, like, as a gamer.
And it's also possible that, you know, that Super Metroid was, you know, the third game they developed, so they understood how to communicate that better.
Yeah, it took them 3 years, I believe, to develop. It was one of the longest developments for a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah, and that makes sense. A lot to it.
Almost genius design, in my opinion, just the way that, you know, the map is utilized. And where it's a little confusing, of course, we did a lot of that to ourselves by, you know, playing it with such breaks in between that we would often forget where things were. And so that slowed us down a little bit. But, I mean, it's you know, one of the very few games I'd consider playing through again, honestly. It was that fun. Right. So I might give it a break for a year or two and see if I can come back with a fresh mind and try her again. Super, super awesome game, though. Of course, that's no news to anybody if you're a gamer. Most of you probably have played it.
Finally got that feather in our cap, though. Feels good.
It does feel good. Yeah. You know, the first three old-school Metroids, probably the magnum opi of the series, and we've beaten them all in the last 2 years, so it's been awesome.
Pretty cool.
What about some other games that you beat?
Yeah, so I did beat one more. I did beat Lice is Strange before the storm.
Lice is strange.
Yeah.
It just gets right up in your hair.
It's real strange. No, Life is Strange.
Oh, that's a different game.
Life is Strange. Now, you and I both love the OG Life is Strange.
It's absolutely.
I think it's probably one of our almost signature games for the podcast. I feel like we tote that game a lot.
Between that and Doom.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Like those, like, you know,
which are very different games.
Quite different.
Yeah.
You know, one you're playing as a teenage girl taking pictures, and the other one you're killing demons in hell. So, yeah, quite different. but this is the prequel. I'll not give away too much about it, but it does not include the lead character from the first game. So this is specifically dealing with Chloe Price, not Chloe Fraser that I was just talking about, and sort of her experiences while Max, who is the character from the first game, was away. So in the first game, Max kind of comes back and reunites with Chloe. This is sort of Chloe in that, I guess, weird time when Max isn't around. And it's another great game. I felt like it did meander a little bit here and there. It's only three episodes long, so it's not the full five that the original was, but I do think that the writing was just as strong. Mechanics are always feel a little tacked on a game like this, where you just kind of have to do things like put a few things together, like little puzzles, or, you know, the order of things, or like search around a room and stuff like that. But another really standout, you know, adventure game. So if you enjoyed the world of the, you know, first game, the main entry, then there's no reason you shouldn't play this one.
Now, was it different developers?
Different developer, yes. Yeah. It's also, not Don't Nod, but man, I can't remember the other.
But it was also some replacement voice actors due to the strike, correct?
Yeah, there was, which it wasn't as jarring as I thought it would be.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. All right, so
and you actually have a copy of that too, so.
I do, in fact. Yeah, I don't know if I brought that up as a pickup.
Hey, I don't think I ever brought it up that I got that game.
Yeah, well, we got it, and we're going to play it.
I got it as a... if you don't follow Wario64 on Twitter, you should. But he tweeted out, I don't know, a month or two ago that Amazon had a pricing error on the deluxe version of this and sold the deluxe version, which is normally $25, for $6.
Ooh.
So I got a couple of copies of that.
Yeah, it was pretty hot, and thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I beat a big one, Jake.
Oh,
I'm proud of it.
Oh,
I purposely saved it for last in this section.
Of course you did.
I hope you don't mind. I'm super proud of finally beating a giant turn-based RPG. I'm so shit at it. I'll get to the very end and quit.
Just
I will do it.
Abort.
I will do that. And I have finally finished Dragon Quest VIII on the PS2. Big announcement.
That's
coming out
crazy.
Saying it. So proud. 82 hours, 21 minutes. I did it without using the monsters that you're supposed to use in the game because I didn't do that part, and so I somehow still beat it. It's pretty amazing. Everyone should play it. It's so whimsical. Level 5 had a hand in it, which I think also...
Give them love. Always give them love. Level 5 was awesome.
I wish they would make Dark Cloud 3.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, what else can you say about it, man? It's so good. The characters are so good. There's a few things I don't like about the characters, though, in that the female character is very... I don't like the way they portray her at all. Like, when you maximize her ability, she becomes ultimate sexy lady, and all of her attacks are like blowing kisses and hitting people with their hips, and it's just not, it's not okay.
That's hilarious.
Nowadays.
No, that's dumb.
It's silly.
Sometimes I feel like that a lot of those RPG developers are a little bit behind the curve in terms of gender equality.
Yeah, this was 10 years ago, but still, it's 10 that
years?
Part is, or no, it's 15.
Yeah, it's gonna be, yeah,
it's longer.
It's gonna be longer.
Still, I mean, aside from that, I think it's a very strong game. Just the music and just the colors and everything, it makes me so happy. Even when it was, you know, kind of kicking my ass, I still have a good feeling about this game. It makes me happy.
That's so. one game series that I love the music almost universally in is Dragon Quest games. I love that main theme and just how it's, I don't know, it wears its electronic influences right on its shoulder, and I really like that.
Yes.
Sleeve, not shoulder.
Right. Also, the story... is kind of neat. It's sort of this, you know, it's very high fantasy, medieval sort of fantasy. There's a king that's turned into a frog, and you got to defeat an evil thing. Maybe it's a little bland by modern standards, but it feels very fairy tale, and I really like that about it.
It's a good escape.
Yeah, it was very, like, you know, I would almost say cut and dry in terms of how it operates. You know how a lot of those RPGs will have so many twists and turns. Chrono Trigger comes to mind, where it's sort of hard to keep track of everything that's going on. Final Fantasies do this a lot. There's just so many dives and twists and turns, and every character almost has to have its own, you know, 3 or 4 hour story with it. This was 82 hours of just a pretty decent, like, I felt like I was in on what was going on the whole time, which is pretty
good. Awesome.
Maybe I'm admitting that I'm stupid and don't get most games, but I like this one. All right, so that takes us into the Let's Get Wild With It, the hashtag Just Beat It section of the show.
Just beat it, beat it, beat it.
Just beat it, beat it, beat it. If you beat a game.
Hey, also, congratulations to us. We beat a lot of games.
We
so
did.
Cheers to us.
Hey, we beat some games.
Yay.
Actually, we would be equal amounts Polykillers of the Week this week. We beat more games than anybody that that tweeted at us in the last 2 weeks.
Hot damn.
Which hasn't happened in a while.
Not a long.
So that's good. So hashtag Just Beat It. Use the hashtag Just Beat It. They're on Twitter. Send a screen cap of your game. Maybe tweet at us too. That helps.
Yeah.
Also
tell us what the game is.
What the game
we
is.
Don't know what those credits mean.
Sometimes we don't. Sometimes
like unless it's Hideo Kojima, we're probably not going to know who made the game. Or what the game was.
Yeah, exactly. So help us out there. So let's go ahead and get started. Starting off here, Mark at Cartridge Bros P2 says his secret for good nipple action is pretending to enter the Konami code on her finished Ease Origin.
Very nice, Ease Origin. So Sean at Cartridge Bros, wife and daughter, as well as James at RetroPixel, finished Super Mario Odyssey. The southern version of the game was titled Old Plumber Where Art Thou.
Do you think anybody will get that?
I hope so. You better.
Do we have to should we explain it?
We'll not explain it. We'll see if anyone gets it.
Okay.
If you don't get this, look it up.
Church at the Game Church at the Game Grinder finished Ruiner, a game about how Church lets slip he has a booger collection to his now ex-girlfriend.
No. That just ruined it.
Ruined it.
Pam at Josila, who says nothing takes the dance floor to the next level quite like swine flu, finished Super Castlevania number 4.
It'll make the dance floor get a little bit wild when you got that pig flu.
Everybody oink now.
Musty at Musty Hobbit, who is a suitable substitute for a Somali pirate, finished Nier Automata.
Oh, very nice.
It looks very pirate-esque.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. Sean at Cartridge Bros managed to finish the long shot campaign of Madden 18 without committing seppuku. You hated it.
I did.
All right.
Catherine at K_song finished Insane Cold, a game about Canada. It's cold there.
Canada.
It's colder than Mars in places, I hear.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Frankie at Viper Strike, who doesn't need drugs to get high. It just rubs hot meatloaf on his soft belly instead. Finished Injustice 2. Let me know what you think about that, Frankie. I enjoyed the game. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, and maybe let us know how you do your meatloaf thing there.
I don't like
hot
meatloaf, though.
Well, you
it's just beefcake with ketchup frosting.
I'm into that. Cliff at Cliff Hikes would like us to remind everyone that starting this week, Casual Friday will officially become Friction Fridays. Show up with a dry palm and show up early. Finished Horizon Zero Dawn Frozen Wilds.
Very nice. Chris at CWR2 finished Die Hard, a game that is not a Christmas game, and if anyone says it is, Trav will stab you in the pelvis.
It's not a Christmas game.
Not a Christmas game. Just it is a Christmas movie, but not a Christmas game.
No, it's a movie that takes place during Christmas.
No, it's a Christmas movie.
It is not.
It's
That's
Christmas
so
movie.
Stupid. That's so stupid.
It's a Christmas movie.
Monkey Girl at Colette Lev, who has her own cooking show where she makes everything from Velcro, finished Bioshock. That sounds delicious, Monkey
That does
Girl.
Sound. Like sounds real nice.
Velcro souffle.
Velcro souffle.
Now it's time for the Polykillers.
Polykillers.
People that beat more than one game.
More than one. Which is us.
Hey!
All right.
Bow, bow, bow.
Moving on.
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, it's me. It is totally me. Jeffrey at Self-Destructo, whose secret power is something like he likes to call three dudes at once. What?
Whose secret power is something he likes to call three dudes at once.
Okay. Okay, sorry. Finish Shantae, Half-Chinny Hero, and Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap. Now, this is Wonder Boy. That's a game that I'd like to beat, but I'm shit at it.
This is the, they're on the Switch, yeah?
Yeah, it is on the Switch. I got the old
Is it on
risky.
PS4 as well?
It should be.
Okay.
It might... Yeah, I think it is.
Ryan at It's Rocket Sauce completed We Love Katamari and Resident Evil 7. In Resident Evil 7, the only way to calm a psychotic murderous family is to blast Pure Moods Volume 1.
What is that?
You don't remember Pure Moods?
I don't.
They had like the, all the wild, like, they had like commercials for them. You could call now and get Pure Moods Volume 1. And it was like all the soothing, like, tribal.
Okay, so it was like a Time Life collection of CDs that if you weren't completely satisfied, you could send it back for a full refund.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love those commercials.
They also took Discover, which is rare.
Oh, that is rare. Very rare. Miles at Flock of Nerds finished Jazz Punk and Tomb Raider reboot from 2013, where Lara Croft cried after gutting a baby deer and then ruthlessly murdered 279 men with children and families immediately after.
What an arc that was.
That was insane. It's like, I've shot a deer to survive. Then, I've killed a man. Let's continue killing men. That's fun.
Nonstop for 13 hours.
But,
great game, though.
You know, maybe that was just a breaking point.
Yeah.
Love that game. Also, he's going to pick up and play, or maybe already has picked up, Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I think is a superior sequel. So,
also, yes, also very good. Great. I agree with that. Andrew at FitNat put a bow on Super Mario Odyssey and ARMS, a game that lays out the pros and cons of the Second Amendment in a respectable way.
Very nice. Very nice.
Get it? ARMS?
I get it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, he's bearing them. Diego at Latino Lawyer finished Rocket League and Floor Kids. Floor Kids, a game where showing off nunchuck moves in front of a first grade class goes horribly wrong.
That's why those kids are on the floor.
Yeah.
Not good with nunchucks.
You got concussions.
Retrolectors at Retrolectors, whose turnip harvest this year was fucking amazing, finished Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, two biggins.
Sweet
Retro
turnips.
Mojo at Retro_Mojo, who loves them shaved, finished Super Mario Odyssey, Calderous Blaze, and Cinemora EX.
I would think it's Caladrius Blaze.
Caladrius Blaze.
I'm still married to that. And
sure,
Cinemora?
It sounds like a wrestler.
I don't know. He played some games that are hard to pronounce.
Caladrius Blaze. It really does sound like a wrestler.
It does. Kevin at Buried on Mars, who fends his neighborhood from street gangs by chasing them down with a homemade spiked purple dildo, completed Metroid Fusion as well as the two recent Saints Row 4 and Get Out of Hell. Hence the inspiration for the spiked purple dildo.
Absolutely. Dean at round_2_gaming, Wolfenstein 2, Excalibur 2097, and Patapon. Beat all three of those. Patapon is a game where Sean Connery tactfully explains the menstrual cycle to middle school boys.
Makes sense to me. Can you do a good Sean Connery?
I can, but I really don't use that topic, so I'm not going to.
Kyle at all caps Doppler, who has struggled with the rare condition of mushy tushy for over 20 years, completed Left 4 Dead 2, Hand of Fate, and Risk of Rain.
Risk of Rain, that's a nice little roguelike. Came out on PC. I think it was eventually going to make its way to Vita. Not sure if it did, but it is on PS4. It's a lovely little game. Have you ever played it?
I have not.
You should. It's fun. It's fun. It's difficult, though. Hand of Fate, also one of the best games that no one played. Chris at BassGuy654, our ultimate poly killer this episode, says the most metal thing he's ever done was piss on a rival kid's sandcastle. He finished Uninvited, Blaster Master Zero, Shovel Knight, and Crisis Force.
Would you ever piss on a rival kid's sandcastle?
I mean, it depends on the castle.
Depends on the kid.
If it offended me.
Yes.
Absolutely, I would.
Fun times. That's pretty cool, Chris. Good job on beating all those games.
Yeah.
Blaster Master Zero is one that I'm
interested in.
Yeah, one day when I switch it up, that's what I'm going to play. All right, so that does it for all the hashtag Just Beat It. Once again,
sure.
Take a screenshot, send it in, use the hashtag, let us know, tell us what the game is, and we'll make fun of you here, right here on the show.
Probably.
Now, for games that we've added to our backlog, of course, we've all wiped some out this holiday season, the end of the year.
It's time to shuffle some back in.
Yes, we had some resolutions we had to meet. We had goals. We had plans. Mm. We've knocked them out. Now we must add to the pile of shame.
Mm-hmm.
I added Pain Lord or Brain Lord.
I thought it was one of the S&M games.
Yeah, it could be.
Pain Lord.
There on the Super Nintendo. Played it a small amount already, enjoying it. Going to add it to the backlog. Going to beat it probably very soon.
Nice.
And also Boatensphere?
Boatensphere. I don't know. You gave me nothing.
I know, much like Odin Sphere for their PS2. Played a little bit of it, too, because, you know, right after Dragon Quest VIII, I was like, finally, I freed myself up to actually play another PS2 game for once. It's been 2 years. Threw that one in, not knowing what to expect, and it's very, very, very intriguing. Art-wise, almost like a cutout, like storybook cutouts for the art style. I don't know if you've ever seen it before.
I have.
Everything's very interesting. And the way it's played is, you know, the map is just a circle. And you keep going in a circle, and there's exits in the circle.
Wow, it's probably a sphere. I doubt if it's a circle. It's probably a sphere.
Well, it's actually there's no sphere. It's 2D. But it's very much supposed to be a sphere. But it doesn't really work that way. But it's very cool. I really enjoy it. Just it's just bonkers enough for me to like it. So
booyah.
Those are two that I've added to the old backlog.
Booyah. So I added Pyrex.
What is that, Tupperware?
Yeah, no, it's glass.
What is that, glass?
It's probably glass.
Yeah, you can make Pyrex
casseroles.
Yeah.
No, but it's Pyre, which is the game that I mentioned earlier, which picked up from Supergiant, Observer, and Jotun. So, like, the three games that I bought, I feel like all these are small enough, manageable enough to play through, to go ahead and add to the backlog. I really have no idea how long it's going to take to beat any of these, but I'm assuming 10 hours or less for at least two of them. I think Pyre might be a little bit longer, depending on how much time you want to put into it, but we'll see.
Yeah, and speaking of Pyre, it reminds me of, because I've not played Pyre, but I did listen to JD Play and Listen's interview of Darren Korb, and he shared some music from Pyre, and I really want to play Pyre now, because some of that music was just absolutely awesome. Almost threw up. It was so awesome just there.
There you go.
It's pretty good.
So it's $10 right now, so you should pick it up.
Yeah, I should do that. Now, if you want to throw up because things are so awesome, what you need to do is head on over to Caltech, Calden.tech, rather.
Mm-hmm.
That's the website. Yeah. Caltech is... Caltech sponsors this episode and all of our episodes. What can I read? It's like right there. I should just read it. This episode is sponsored by Calden Technologies LLC. Caltech focuses on product development in robotics, web apps, mobile apps, home automation, or some combination of the above. To learn more or to start a conversation about your future product or idea, send an email to info@calden.tech. That is info@calden.tech. You can now go to calden.tech as a website and see all the things that Calden .tech is up to. And we also want to thank Calden.tech, because without Calden.tech, we could not give you the prizes from the hashtag Polykill contest.
Yes.
So a special extra thanks to Caltech for that.
Absolutely. So if you like what you're hearing so far, check us out on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Polykill podcast. You can also find our stuff at the Cartridge Club website. That is cartridgeclub.org, short for organization.
Organisms.
There you go. You can also find all of our content at polykill.com. And if you want to message us, send us an Alf Kilter story, maybe a compliment, maybe some PayPal money, whatever, you can use polykillpodcast@gmail.com. Don't send PayPal there. We don't have the PayPal set up for Polykill Podcast.
But we will if you send us money there.
We'll figure it out. Also, if you didn't catch it last time, we're on Spotify now, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It sounds pretty good, too. Yeah, why does it sound better there?
I don't know why. It just sounds really good, like audio quality. Like, I turned it on in the car just listening. It's like, my God, this sounds amazing. So if you use Spotify, you should be able to get all of our podcasts. Everything we've ever done is available there. Also, of course, we're available on things like iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all that stuff. So just if you use those, give us a like, give us a thumbs up, give us a subscribe, give us a heart, give us a wedgie, whatever you can do on those things. I don't know. Also, last but not least, our YouTube channel, which is just flourishing right now. We've got millions of subscribers. Thank you. Please like and subscribe, share. I'm just kidding. We don't have 100 yet, but eventually we will. And that's where you can see our faces for the contest. We're probably going to do our best to create some more unique video content in the upcoming year. So make sure that you are tuned in at our YouTube channel for that.
Yes, and thanks to everyone who has already done all those things.
Absolutely.
Please continue to do so.
We love you.
And that takes us into the long play. Got extra into it this time.
It was good.
Hoping maybe it will make it better at least once.
Yes.
Games that we are spending the most time with in our backlog.
Yes, what's yours?
For me, I have moved on to Bologna 5.
Nice.
Bologna 5. I'm sorry, Persona 5.
Persona 5.
Dude, it's weird and I love it.
It is very weird and I'm glad you love it.
It feels like a 13 or 14-year-old's, you know, fantasy dream about getting back to, again, you know, getting back at all of their abusers and wrongdoers and people that have crossed them in their past. It just feels like that fantasy. I don't know, like a good dream or a fever dream almost of violence.
I mean, it really is. I mean, it's one of those things that sort of transport you. Even though I've never been to Tokyo, never lived in Tokyo, never had friends, never went to high school, I feel like I've been there, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's very familiar.
Now, you're saying you never had friends in Tokyo, never went to high school in Tokyo?
No, just any of those things in general. but no, I really do like the vibe. The music is awesome. The animation is awesome. The gameplay is awesome. The setup is cool. The number of things you can do on the side is awesome. It's just an awesome, awesome, awesome game. You should play it.
How would you know? I haven't finished it.
I know I haven't finished it, but I've put 20 hours into it. Okay, so... I've been there enough.
So you've gotten through the tutorials.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. What are you playing long term?
Long term, I'm probably going to decide very soon what it's going to be. I'm between two different games right now. JD would probably push me toward one over the other.
Prey, most likely.
But it's between Prey and Shadow of War. Now, here's my dilemma. I really do want to play Shadow of War. Because I like the gameplay, I like the aesthetic, I like Lord of the Rings. It feels kind of, you know, I don't know why, but like when it gets cold, I'm attracted to like high fantasy. I don't know, it's weird. You know, I just did come off two third person action adventure games, you know, in Uncharted and in Assassin's Creed. So I don't know if I'm ready to switch to a first person game that's more shooter based and more, you know, interactive like that. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
So what's holding you back from things like, let's go over it again, The Witcher or Breath of the Wild or Horizon Zero Dawn?
Right. I need the mental space for that. And we'll hear more about that in the next episode.
Okay. And then, so side quests, games that we're playing on the side, games that we're not telling our long play about, we're just sort of gnawing away at them as we get time to do so. Sometimes you just get in the mood for a different game than your long play.
Right. Sometimes you just want a side chick.
For me, Chrono Trigger. Now, I think I just started playing it right after, or maybe just before that last episode that we did.
Just before.
And I'm near the end now. And so I did I got a little burnout on it there for a minute, so I switched gears to Dragon Quest VIII, but I do plan to go back to Chrono Trigger and finish it up. I have some, you know, maybe I'll save it for when I actually finish the game.
Okay.
But I have some maybe unpopular opinions about this game.
Fair.
And also, my wife and I finally jumped back on the horse. I don't mean that sexually, but we've done that as well. Baldur's Gate 2, a dick alliance,
yes.
Which is a weird thing to say after I just mentioned my wife.
It's Baldur's Gate to a dick alliance.
Yeah, to a dick alliance.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. So, like, you can't get to the dick alliance because of the gate that's in the way.
Right.
I understand.
It's Baldur's.
I think. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2, we're playing that on the Xbox. Pretty fun. I'm still enjoying it. I mean, it's much like, you know...
Much like the first one.
Much like the first one.
Absolutely.
Very Diablo-esque. You just run around, stab shit, get loot, rinse, repeat, do
missions. Stab, stab, steal, steal, steal.
A lot of fun, though. Very addictive.
We end up
playing it too late every time, which is a lot of fun. So I'm sad that we might
wrap
beat this game. And then, you know, I guess we could play Gauntlet or some of the other games that are similar to it.
Yeah, truth.
But we're having fun with it. So
sweet.
That's where I'm at with that. What about you?
On the side, I am playing Golf Story on the Switch.
Interesting.
There you go.
How's it going?
Oh, good. I've completed the first world / course, and I've moved on to the second one, which is sort of like a dilapidated mini golf weird hick town, and it's pretty fun. So
interesting. So Do you have to play golf in this game?
You have to play golf. Yeah, that's part of the game.
Do you have to be good at golf?
You have to get good at this game's version of golf.
Okay. It seemed like I did play a minute of it on your Switch one night, and I found it to be very easy, the golf aspect.
Yeah, it's very intuitive. I mean, it's much like, I would say Mario Golf for Game Boy or something like that, where it's pretty streamlined. This does throw little wrinkles at you, like on even like the more pristine courses, you got little moles that are hiding out.
And they have like ranges they can jump out and get your ball.
They get your ball. And where they put it is completely random. Sometimes they might just throw it in a bunker, and sometimes they might just put it right back in the fairway for you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a coin toss as to how that'll go. But it's charming. It's fun. I really do enjoy the little world that it's created, and I love the idea of a golf RPG. I don't know why it's not been one made till now, but this is a good one. I'm glad it took its time getting here.
Yeah, it's very weird. I'm into it. All right, so that takes us into what we're all here for, right? Well, leave me and you. The discussion, the end of the year superlatives.
End of the year, 2017 year interview.
Yeah, and it's I think it's our favorite episode to do. If we could do superlatives every episode, we just like picking winners, I think. That's what the Polyco Contest is all about. We like lists of things.
Yeah.
We like feeling like our opinions are valuable, which we understand that they're not, but
you know,
this is our show.
It's ours. So yeah, fuck off.
Yeah. So let's start off here. Let's give some context. So
a little bit of context.
What's going to happen here is we're going to go. We've pre-selected some awards, some categories, so to speak, and we've based most of them on games that we've beaten over the last year. So that doesn't include games that are made in the last year or whatever. Just right. games
this
that
we've
played and beaten.
Our 2017, not necessarily 2017 at large.
Right. So that's where it's. I guess it's a little bit different or different enough. And yeah. So all the games that we've beaten sort of get categorized and get nominated for all these different things, and we're going to weigh them against each other and select a winner. Now, there are two in which the 2017 year is important. Of course, we're going to base it on character of the year, our favorite, you know, of games that came out in 2017, what's our favorite character, and then at the very end of the show, we'll talk about our favorite game that we played that was
released.
Both made in 2017 that we beat in 2017.
Right.
So that will be much like many others people have done. So to add some context here, I beat 71 games this year. I'm pretty proud of that. It's
that's crazy.
Certainly much more than I've beaten in previous years. I believe maybe I got in the 50s last year, maybe low 60s. Before that was just the 30s. So I've added, you know, I've beaten more games every year. Can I beat 71 in 2018? I don't know. I have a PhD to do and all kinds of other things. But hopefully, I mean, shit, we'll see.
Who knows?
Now, I will say of those 71, some were smaller. You know, I beat Limbo and Inside and Gone Home, some quick hitters. And then also four of them were, I went on that little football sports tirade there.
Right.
Those are counted in this list, but I'm admitting that, you know, they're not the most difficult.
But still, 71 is a great number.
I think it's a good number. What about you?
I didn't even make it to 30. But I got 28.
That's okay.
Some of them are you know, fairly larger in scale, like, you know, beating, just for some context, because I don't think it'll actually show up later, but I did beat four Uncharted games. Beat 2, 3, 4, and Lost Legacy.
Right, which so is most, about 100 hours of,
yeah, that's,
of game.
That's sizable.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed, obviously, you know, 35, 40 hours in that. So, you know, I did spend time with some bigger titles. Did have a few smaller ones, too, like...
Rhyme, Gone Home,
Edith Finch. No, Gone Home
was that last year? Yeah. Yeah, Edith Finch, yeah.
Gears 4, you know, so some bigger games.
Yeah, yeah.
I tend to stick with the bigger games for some reason, which is why, you know, didn't even beat 30. However, I'm proud of what I did beat. But would have liked to get into more.
Right, right, right. So another wrinkle in this is that I have more...
A lot more awards to give out.
I have more, yeah, categories than Jake because I don't think it's often fair to compare games from, you know, 1992 to a game to 2015. So I've split a lot of them up by retro and modern
right. And
in that way. Also, it's really hard to represent 71 games because I liked most of them and I want to give all of them something. It doesn't matter. It's not like they'll be sad if I don't. But from
right.
my own point of view, I feel like there's a few that I want to, you know,
recognize.
Point to and recognize. So
sure.
We'll start out with retro RPG of the year for me. So,
okay.
The ones that made that list, and do you want to read mine?
Yeah,
we do it
sure,
that way?
Sure, we'll do it that way. So your nominees for retro RPG that you played in 2017 are Secret of Mana, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy II, and Wanderers from East 3.
Yes, and the caveat there is I have not finished Chrono Trigger. Maybe I expected to before this episode, which is why I listed it there. But it's still yet, I think, and this might surprise some people, given how much I did not like Secret of Evermore and how similar it is to Secret of Mana. Secret of Mana was probably my favorite RPG, retro RPG that I played. Now, one of the differences in between that, Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy II, is that it's action RPG, which you
right.
might find that I am more
inclined to, especially in the retro space. Yeah.
For sure. I certainly did end up liking Final Fantasy II despite my frustrations. You know, once I figured out I could heal my whole party, it sort of was a game changer, literally. And Wanderers from East 3 was quite a surprise. It was just a little short. You know, it's only a 5 or 6 hour game. It's very,
okay,
you know, bland in some regard, but a surprisingly fun game. I think Secret of Mana just had it all for me. You had music, colors, a pretty decent story, and it was just altogether fun. I couldn't get away from it. I played it for, you know, 2 and 3 a.m. sometimes on work nights, which is not okay.
That is very not okay.
And so
I
really enjoyed it. So that was my RPG, old school RPG that I played this year, was Secret of Mana.
Secret of Mana. All right. Nice.
I'll do one for you here. Let's move on to modern RPGs.
Modern RPGs. So this is going to be stuff made within the last, 20 years?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think
yeah.
so. You know, like we did in the last episode, after 2002.
After 2002.
Now,
okay.
You have a few here. One that I wasn't even aware was an RPG, but maybe it's more tactical.
It is.
So you have Persona 5, which you did not complete, but you played a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Right.
And Golf Story.
Yeah.
Where are you at?
So now these, so the fun thing about this, these are all games that were released this year. So that's what I'm going, because I didn't play any modern RPGs enough this year to say that I had something else, if that makes sense. Uh-huh. I've still got some RPGs out there that I haven't finished. A lot of them, actually. However, I really love Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle more than I thought I would, for sure. I still haven't beaten it, but I'm probably 3/4 of the way there. It is one of those games that I did not expect to be nearly as good as it did. Golf Story, just talked about that one. But, I mean, I think the obvious winner here for me is, even though I didn't beat it, Persona 5.
Right.
It's a game that I anticipated. I love the art style, love the music, love the gameplay, love the world, love the series. There's just, you know, there's, I mean, zero flaws with this game, in my opinion. It's a damn near perfect game. And, you know, it's everything I wanted it to be.
It's true. And, you know, it's hard to believe. 8 months ago, if we're reflecting on the year in totality, 8 months ago we did the unboxing that you got. You got the full edition, right?
Yeah, I got the, big the Take Your Heart edition.
Take Your Heart edition.
Still book, the little school bag, the little stuffed cat or not cat, depending on who you ask. And got the soundtrack CD sampler thing. And yeah.
So go back and to the annals of Polykill's YouTube and find that video. It was actually really fun to do, and we tried to make it funny, as we tend to try to do. Okay.
Persona 5, my winner.
Good
All right,
job.
So Modern RPG of the Year for Trav. The nominees being Dragon Quest VIII, Nier Automata, Witcher 3, and Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance.
It's probably an easy one, and okay. I quite enjoyed all of these. I didn't like Nier as much as I thought I would, but I still liked it. Dragon Quest VIII, I think I feel better about beating it than I feel about the game in general.
Fair enough.
Great game, though. Still, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, special place in my heart because I beat it with my wife.
Absolutely.
Did not expect her to like that sort of game, and she did. And that makes me excited because there's tons of those out there.
Absolutely.
But in general, I think it's hard to top Witcher 3 in any category
you
put it in.
Boy, it's really hard to... It's I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's the game that's defined this generation.
Yes, and it's, you know, thinking back, I remember maybe I even said it on this episode, I was discouraged by this game at one point. I wasn't really filling out the combat system very well, and I'd sort of gotten myself stuck in a place, and I considered not playing it, you know, anymore. I was like, man, this game's just too hard and it's too intimidating. It's so big. But I eventually got past that part and the game opened up and I loved every second of it. And it's still a game I might go back and dabble a little bit more in that DLC. People
Sweet.
Highly recommend it, and
yeah.
I have the complete edition. Why not?
There you go.
Can't beat Witcher 3. So that's my, of the game, of the modern RPGs I played this year, that's my favorite.
Sweet. Very nice.
All right. So that takes us into things like Adventure Games of the Year.
Adventure Game. Now, this is something I played a hell of a lot of last year. I don't know if you remember. I beat, like, I don't know, 9 or 10 adventure games last year.
Yes.
And this is a genre that I really do love. And it's because I enjoy good writing, good narrative, good characters. And you get to, that's all just brought to the forefront in this style of game.
Absolutely. And there's some interesting games here. The adventure games usually, they're met with such, you know, people, if they like an adventure game, they love it so much. And there's very little ambiguity when it comes to how people feel about an adventure game.
True.
And a lot of these, you certainly gushed over these. So of your nominees for the adventure game that you played in 2017, your favorite is between What Remains of Edith Finch, Rime, Tacoma, or the most recent finish, Life is Strange Before the Storm. What do you think?
This is tough. This is actually quite difficult because I love each of these for their own unique things. What Remains of Edith Finch, I love it because of the unique storytelling, the overall dismal feel of the game, the despair that you actually kind of go through with some of the characters in what Remains of Edith's Foot. Rime, this game took me off guard. You know, some people didn't seem to impact some people as much as it did me, but I love the world. Love the puzzles, love the simplicity of the game. Tacoma, not the most standout in terms of like story arc or dynamics in terms of what happens within the game, but one of the most unique ways to tell a story within a game that I've played. And then Life is Strange, it's just one of those things. It's a weird almost form of like micro nostalgia going back to that world, even though I just kind of went through it last year.
Right.
It's kind of like this warm feeling of being back in Arcadia Bay and Blackwell High School and all that stuff that just like, it's so good to be back. However, there can only be one, and this is difficult. I say, you know, it's pretty difficult, but my final answer is Rime.
Oh, I would have put my money on Rime.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you talked about it. You said Rapturous. I believe that was the game you said Rapturous.
Magical was this game.
Oh, right.
Abzu was Rapturous. This game is magical.
Okay. Which is better? Magical or rapturous?
Boy, it's hard to say. It depends on my mood. But Ryan, now I will say apparently the Switch port is not great.
Oh.
So if you are playing it or trying it on the Switch, it might not be the best version of the game, but I highly recommend playing the game, you know, in general, because I would really be interested to see what other people think. I know Caleb Ross said he thought it was good, but not great. That's the only other feedback that I've heard about the game from anyone. Sort of took me by surprise. Amazing soundtrack too. So check it out.
Nice.
Yeah. So when it comes to your adventure game that you played in 2017,
yeah,
we've got a few here. We've got four nominees, starting with Gone Home. This is a game that came out a few years ago. I beat it last year. You beat it this year. 999, game you just talked about. Inside, one of 2016's darlings. Great game. And then the latest chapter in The Walking Dead from Telltale, New Frontier.
Yeah. So it was a good year for me for adventure games. Adventure games is usually not something I go for. I think we talked about that in the adventure game episode. I wanted to get more into.
Right.
And I certainly did that this year. I played Gone Home, usually not my style of game. I, you know, for a guy that likes things like Cuphead and
Mega Man.
You know, Mega Man. Gone Home's a little more of a relaxed approach to games, and I certainly did not like it. I was actually very surprised by how much I did like it. Very creepy vibes. It was, you know, even more so than Resident Evil 7. The hair stood up on the back of my neck throughout this game because of this very lonely and dark,
the tension
and
the
much you know, very much tension. Is that a thing you say?
Very much tension. Sure.
Very much tension. Very much tension. High tension.
I want to see that on a box quote for Gone Home. Very much tension.
Very much tension. Yeah. Of course, Inside, is it a spoiler to say there's a twist? Maybe not. I don't know, but it's such a great experience all the way through.
It's an insanely well put together game. It's one of those things that there is no flaws with that game.
There really isn't, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, I also beat Limbo this year. I didn't throw that in there. I could have.
Inside is definitely superior.
I certainly preferred Inside, which is why I put it on this list. And Walking Dead: New Frontier, I have fond memories of, even though I think it wasn't quite The Walking Dead's of the past. I did play it alongside Miles, and we were able to share our ideas and thoughts throughout, and that really made it a more fun experience.
Sure, yeah, that's cool.
Unfortunately, like I said, it wasn't quite up to that Walking Dead level for me. It was sort of, if you could compare it to the Resident Evils, where old Resident Evils were very lonely and scary, and then the 5 and 6 became very action-oriented, I feel like this Walking Dead sort of had that.
Okay.
Where it became less scary, more action, and didn't really grip me as much as those older ones did. That said, 999, I really, really enjoyed it. I'd heard tons about it. I'd said it on a panel at MAGFest that talked about some good adventure games, and heard people talk about it. I'd never heard of it. My interest started there, and then, you know, 2 or 3 years later, I finally picked it up. It held up. It's solid, and I'm looking for more games like it, whether it be on the, you know, whatever handheld system I have, the PSP or the DS. If anyone has suggestions for games similar to 999, I'm all ears. That was my favorite adventure game of the year.
Sweet. I will recommend Danganronpa series. You can get those on PS4.
Okay. So. Yeah, well, nice. Thank you. All right. Action, adventure.
Oh, my favorite.
Game of the year.
My favorites.
We'll play. There's tons of these made. There's no shortage.
I don't know.
Of action adventure games out there. Jake played most of the Uncharted's over the last couple of years.
I did.
On his nominee list, he has Uncharted Lost Legacy, a recent completion, Uncharted 4, and Horizon Zero Dawn, a game he gushed over for months prior to its release and then played it for a hot 10 minutes. And also Assassin's Creed Origins, his most recent completion,
yes,
talked about here on this episode. Let's see if we have any recency bias going into this decision. Jake, okay, where do you stand?
So this is difficult for me because this was actually kind of a standout year for action-adventure games, at least in my opinion. Having the mammoth that was Horizon Zero Dawn, it sort of became a front-runner for Game of the Year for a lot of people when it was released, and that really didn't change toward the end of the year. There was very little that sort of superseded it. Beautiful world, lush environments, incredible creature design, an open world that wasn't completely unforgiving in terms of traversal and just fun to get around in, and amazing different biomes that you go to. You know, sometimes you're in the snowy mountains at night, sometimes you're in the desert plains during the day. So it's one of those games that that really handled the environment in a way that it became a character, and I thought that was really cool. Uncharted Lost Legacy. This one I really did enjoy. Thought it was a great addition to the series. Like I said earlier, Uncharted 4 is a game that I beat this year. Obviously, it didn't release this year, but it did. I did complete it this year. Found it to be just a real standout game in terms of storytelling, character development, set pieces, all that stuff that you want from a big action-adventure game. This game delivered in spades. And lastly, but not leastly, Assassin's Creed Origins. This game sort of shocked me in how much I liked it. So, when it comes to the winner, this one was difficult because for a long time I thought I knew, and then I felt like I didn't know, and then now I know something else. So, the winner for me is Assassin's Creed Origins.
Wow!
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, so, and part of that's probably because I did complete the game and I got the full picture of it with Horizon Zero Dawn. I still haven't completed that one. And, but just the...
Didn't see that coming. If you'd asked me January which one of those I thought you'd like the most.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Right.
Me too, easily. I think the reason is, and this is probably maybe controversial, I don't know, we'll see. Like, I was playing Assassin's Creed Origins, and then one day I kind of got this wild hair to just jump back over into Horizon Zero Dawn. When I did, I found that I just didn't jive with the controls as much as I did with Assassin's Creed Origins. It's like it felt a little looser. It wasn't quite as accurate. The combat felt a little, I don't know, off compared to ACO, which you know, granted, Assassin's Creed has a little more, you know, time to develop that sort of combat where, you know, it was Guerrilla Games' first attempt at a third-person action-adventure game. So maybe they just didn't have the combat quite ironed out. Not saying that it's bad at all. It's just I like the feel of ACO better. That's not why I picked one over the other. It was mainly just because I know the full picture of the game, and I was really surprised by the writing in Assassin's Creed Origins. I thought it was really smart, really grown-up, really mature way to tell the story, and characters took... not shocking, but also very unexpected turns, and I really like that.
Alrighty. Well, that is a surprise. That is absolutely a surprise. I'd be interested to see you know, maybe one day, if you ever do complete Horizon Zero Dawn, I'll bring this question up and say, how does it measure to Assassin's Creed Origins
Fair
in
enough.
Retrospect? So that's interesting.
Huh?
All right, so now it's a big block of me. I have a lot of special little ones here. I apologize to everybody. I'll make them quick. I know you hate hearing me.
Have you done your action-adventure game? I don't think you have.
No, retro? No, it's right here. Let's do it.
Well, it's right here.
I haven't done mine yet? No, I have not.
No.
Well, do that, yeah, and then there's a big block of me.
Big block of you. All right, so for your action-adventure game of the year, now we're going to assume this is more modern.
Yes, this is the modern, yeah.
More modern take. So you actually went through a lot of these. So Rise of the Tomb Raider. Big one. Gears of War 4, Bayonetta 2, Wolfenstein Old Blood, and Quantum Break. That's a handful, friend.
It's a handful, and all of them are great, great games. You know, Quantum Break, interesting with that full motion video. We've talked about it at mm-hmm. length. Mm-hmm. It disappoints a little bit toward the end. I think it wears thin, but I love the idea, and I thought it was pretty decently executed for almost, I would say, a first try for that idea. In the modern age.
Sure, yeah.
Wolfenstein Old Blood, how can you go wrong with some Wolfenstein? It was a short little campaign, sort of a, you know, a half Wolfenstein game perhaps, but certainly full in terms of fun. Like you said, I enjoyed it maybe more so than the New Order, both being amazing.
True.
Bayonetta 2 came out of nowhere for me.
It didn't come out of nowhere. It came from Diego.
Oh, it came from Diego. Who said I can keep it now because I've owned it longer than he has, most likely.
That's hilarious.
And the first Bayonetta is in there, which I'll probably eventually get to. I was very surprised that I like this game. Very Sega, you know, if you could say that about a game.
Sega.
Extremely Sega.
Oh, quite Sega.
I enjoyed it, absolutely. Gears of War 4, that's one that, amongst my cronies, that's one that we tend to flock to for multiplayer fun. So, of course, we all played the campaign to start out, to get the feel. And decent campaign, decent action-adventure campaign. Played it with a buddy. It's absolutely gorgeous. I think because it's Gears of War 4, it feels like it's a bro game that a lot of people skip out on because they think it's just, they think it's like Doom Light. I still think it's a great, great game. A lot of throwbacks to some old characters, and the story's really, really solid.
Yes, agreed.
And then Rise of the Tomb Raider.
See, this one, I have no idea what you're going to pick. Like, most of them, I'm like, yeah, I know what you're going to pick. This one's wide open to me. I have no idea what you're going to pick. Do you know?
Well, you know, it's funny. Last episode or episode before, we were talking about how the naming scheme for the Tomb Raiders were confusing.
Yes.
And that I couldn't remember which one was which.
Right.
And I couldn't even remember for a time whether I'd beaten the game or not, because of the name. But I loved Rise of the Tomb Raider, and I think that's my choice.
Okay.
I absolutely loved that game.
This is the one where you start out in the snow and...
Yes.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, oh yeah.
We made fun of the character arc for the first one, going from like crying over gutting a deer to being murderous. This one actually, you know, obviously the ruthless murder is there. Something that's a departure from the older Tomb Raider series where everything's just puzzles. This is more, you know, literally action-adventure, more almost Assassin's Creed, almost
very
Uncharted.
Yeah.
But... I still think it was my favorite. You know, visually striking. Just, you know, obviously the story's good. It's well written. I love the character that plays Lara Croft in those games. It was absolutely awesome. I enjoyed the shit out of it.
Sweet.
I think number two for me, because I feel like you said, it's very close.
Yeah.
I think Bayonetta 2 was a lot of fun.
Okay. So I kind of figured that too.
Yeah.
My money was actually on Bayonetta 2 if I had to pick.
Really?
Yeah. Just because it was so bizarrely different than anything else in that field.
It certainly was.
Yeah. Sweet. Sweet. All right. So it is now time for you to get into some of your retro shit.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into some retro shit, and we'll do this like this. So your retro action adventure game of the year. We've got three nominees: Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Super Metroid, and Beyond Good and Evil. All
right.
Three standouts in their field.
Standouts. I'll get one out of the way quick. Beyond Good and Evil, I thought, I'm still bewildered by why there's such a cult following for this game. Like, why have people clamored so much for a sequel? To me, it was just... Okay. I thought it was just okay. It's just you sneak around and kill dudes from behind, and it never landed with me. And maybe it's because I played it 15 years later, but I play a lot of old games, and this still
didn't click.
It really didn't.
Okay.
I think the characters are fun, and I think maybe that's why the trailer for the new one was so interesting, because the characters were exuberant, but it didn't do it for me. So it comes down to being between Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past and Super Metroid. And I think my lean here is for one main reason, because I think on most fronts these games are equal in terms of being, you know, absolutely groundbreaking. They defined really the 16-bit genre, in my opinion. They're two of the best games ever made, you could probably say.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that.
I think my fondness for the original Legend of Zelda affects this a little bit, in that nothing will ever top that in terms of a Zelda experience for me.
Okay.
Despite how good A Link to the Past is, my nostalgia is way too strong for that original, so nothing will beat that.
Okay.
I think the Super Metroid, though, you know, it's not, you know, the Zeldas were always rinse and repeat. It was like, all right, now here's a blank Hyrule, go find Ganon. It's very much like Mario game in that respect.
Sure,
you know?
Very much.
Super Metroid really carries on the story, and there's some bits there toward the end where you sort of recognize a part and you see what's going on. You're like, oh, wow, that's from this game. That makes sense. Oh, my God, that's so awesome. And it just felt better to beat. It's more of a challenge, and obviously playing it with a buddy helps. So I think that was my favorite experience of the two games, and maybe... You know, certainly my favorite of the two, but it's close, man. It's hard to pick one over the other, but I think Super Metroid wins there for me.
All right. Nice. Mm-hmm. No surprise, really, to me.
Really? Okay.
No surprise. All right. 16-bit platformer of the year.
Right.
So we got a few nominees here. We've got Demon's Crest, a game that you beat at least three or four times. Castlevania 4, a more recent completion due to the CC Game of the Month. We also have Castlevania Bloodlines and Donkey Kong Country 2.
Right, so I had to split these up between 16-bit and 8-bit. I play a lot of platformers, and there's so many good ones in both that I felt like I couldn't narrow it down enough, so I had to split it up. So I'm very sorry to draw this episode out, so I'll go through this quickly.
Okay.
Demon's Crest, metal as fuck. I wanted to play this game for forever. Beautiful game. Unfortunately, short. It takes maybe 5 hours, even if you fuck it up and finish it early like I did twice. Maybe 5 hours.
Okay.
Super Castlevania 4, very challenging game. I loved it, but I felt like there were some parts of it that were just really cheesy. It's a rehash of the original.
Right.
Of course, it's improved upon and expanded upon. And then Donkey Kong Country 2, I just thought was unfairly hard. I definitely prefer the original.
Same.
So Castlevania Bloodlines, to me, was probably my favorite. It was the only Castlevania to ever grace the Sega Genesis. And maybe Sega in general. I'm having trouble remembering if there's any on any other Sega's exclusive platform. But I thought it knocked it out of the park. I mean, being the, you know, you compare the Genesis to the Super Nintendo, it's not as much slow down. Everything's more bombastic. The sound chip's a little bit better, in my opinion, especially for this game. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. You can play as two different characters. They have different attacks. A lot of fun. So Castlevania Bloodlines would be my favorite of those four.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. On to the 8-bit platformer of the year. Nominees are Kirby's Adventure, Super Contra, Castlevania and Mega Man 6.
Right. So Kirby's Adventure, I think, is just a little too simplistic for me to absolutely love, but it certainly holds up. I get why people like it. Mega Man 6, much like other Mega Man, it doesn't really stand out to me, but it was still a great game. So it really just leaves Castlevania and Super Contra.
Okay.
And I think, you know, it's really hard to top the original Contra in terms of standing out, being good. Super Contra was just, it was... And, you know, a loyal or what you would, I don't know how you would say
faithful.
It, faithful predecessor in that it didn't really change much, which was great. But I think beating that original Castlevania for me, a thorn in my side for years, tough game.
We tried multiple times.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the cartridge froze on us a couple times.
Multiple times.
But, you know, finally beating that one meant so much. Take that, 8-year-old me.
Yeah.
You suck.
Suck it.
32-year-old me is the boss. So I beat that one. I think the original Castlevania is my favorite of those.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Shoot 'em up of the year. This is a genre that I just didn't get into. There's a couple that I wanted to pick up this year and play when it came to shoot 'em ups.
Mm.
Just never made it around to it. But your nominees, you have three. You have 1942.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fairly recent beat. You have Captain Skyhawk,
right.
which is several months ago, and then a more recent Cuphead.
Yeah, it's sort of an unfair comparison here. I really just wanted to give Cuphead some credit. You know, I enjoy playing 1942. It's one of those tried and true old school ones. It was popular in the arcade. Obviously, everybody knows about it. Captain Skyhawk, fun on the NES. Not much of a challenge, really, altogether. Cuphead, I just wanted to say it again.
Cuphead by a mile.
Cuphead's fun. I just want to give Cuphead something. So Cuphead was fun.
All right. Puzzle games. So you played what looks well, you at least nominated four different puzzle games.
Mm-hmm.
You have Portal 2 multiplayer. You played through this with your buddy Josh,
on the old
PC.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong on the Game Boy.
Absolutely.
Goof Troop.
Mm.
Now, you beat that on like New Year's Day last year, right?
Yeah, it was
like
a long time ago. It was the first
very long time ago.
Yeah.
And then Super Bomberman.
Yeah. A bunch of fun games. I love puzzle games.
Sure.
Portal 2. Yeah, it's hard to beat that. It was pretty fun.
Mm.
But I knew what I was getting into having played the original Portal or original Portal 2 without multiplayer. Kind of short for a multiplayer. I wish there was more of it. I think that's my gripe. Of course, that's Valve just never giving you enough, right?
Always teasing you.
Goof Troop was actually a really surprising game. It's only 4 hours long, but it was really, really well thought out. You think it's a kid's game, but it's a decent time.
Nice.
Super Bomberman. I love Bomberman. This one, again, a little bit too short for my tastes.
Okay.
Donkey Kong for Game Boy, a game that I grew up with. Never could beat as a kid. It was the first Cartridge Club portable game of the month.
Okay.
I hunkered down and played through it. Thankfully, thanks to the Cartridge Club portable game of the month, that, you know, it gave me the impetus to finally go at it.
Mm.
You can't beat that game, man. It is absolutely fantastic. Hundreds of levels. It starts out with the original Donkey Kong, you know, jumping over the barrels and such.
Right.
And then transforms into this more expansive game. It turns into basically what precluded the Donkey Kong versus Mario
right.
series.
Okay.
And so it's I don't think you could top it. So it's
very nice.
That's my favorite. That was absolutely good.
Booyah.
All right. Narrative of the year. Stories
narrative
of the games that you played.
Now, we like stories here.
Love stories.
Polycule.
You know, especially, you know, sometimes simpler the better. It doesn't have to be this crazy, twisty 50-hour ride. It just has to be good, compelling.
Maybe sometimes it's defined by good performances.
That's right.
You never
so,
know.
Jake, you've played some games that have some decent stories this year. You played What Remains of Edith Finch, Rime, and Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Where do you stand?
This is also a difficult choice to make. I was sort of surprised by, you know, all of these actually were kind of surprises, like in terms of what, you know, I expected good from all of them, but was sort of blown away by one in particular. So I'll not beat around the old bush. I'm just going to go with What Remains of Edith Finch. I think this is the most interesting series of events that I played in a game this year. And it was one of those games that was just told in interesting ways. And, you know, I'll repeat it. If you haven't played this game, you should. I mean, it's easily worth the $20 ask. I think it's probably on sale at a lot of outlets, at least through the new year. So, you know, make sure you pick this up. I really can't say much more than that because I just don't want to spoil anything at all. But but play it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with when you talk about narrative of the year, we want to say we love it without really giving it away.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So, you have three nominees. You have Resident Evil 7, Wolfenstein Old Blood, and Last of Us Remastered. This is a game that you beat not terribly long ago. All of these. So, these are all fairly late in the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say Last of Us Remastered is just going to run away with that one.
Okay.
I mean, what a great story that was. And, of course, we got the teaser trailer for the sequel that's coming out. And I've avoided it because I'm very cautious and weary of spoilers. So I'm excited to play it, though, whenever it does arrive. So Last of Us Remastered, my favorite story of any game that I played in 2017.
Very nice.
Best original score. We're talking music here.
Music. We like music here.
Now, Jake, not only did you play a hot 16 minutes of Persona 5, but you got the soundtrack CD as part of your
16 hours, not 16 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You got the soundtrack. Did you listen to the soundtrack at all?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
I actually at work will sometimes just put on the soundtrack. It's about 3 hours of original music, and
let it run.
Acid jazz, man. Gotta love acid jazz.
Yeah. So Persona 5, Rime, and What Remains of Edith Finch, once again making the nominee list here. Yeah. Which one is your favorite to jam on?
Boy, it's difficult because each of these kind of do something a little different for me. What Remains of Edith Finch does the tension and the questions and the all these darker emotions. Rime is a little more triumphant. It's a little more heroic, orchestral. And then Persona 5 is just fun to jam out to.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a difficult choice. But the one that I just remember striking me the most is going to be Persona 5. It's very fun, upbeat, jazzy. It just really sets the mood. It's something kind of out of left field because acid jazz sort of died when Jamiroquai hung up his hat. So it's kind of fun to see it come back.
Yeah. Awesome.
Really liked it. For you, you have three nominees. You got one slightly retro styled here in Shovel Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You have Cuphead, which is a nice combination of jazz and ragtime from the 30s, and then Persona 5. One of my picks.
Right. And again, I haven't quite finished Persona 5, of course,
sure.
But you know, I've listened to enough of the music to know whether or not I like it, and I do like it. I think it's like you said, it fits the game really well. It really sets the mood. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the game having any other music to it.
Agreed. It's kind of weird. It's indelible.
Yeah. Cuphead. I think the music certainly matches the game and the style of the game, and it really adds to the ambiance. I don't think it's the kind of music I'd throw on just to listen to, you know?
Sure.
And I think that's why I prefer Shovel Knight's music, in that a lot of those scores, I don't mind hopping on Spotify and seeking out those, or even YouTube and seeking out some of those tracks and just jamming on them, because a lot of them are pretty intense. It's like that, almost like a hard rock 8-bit chiptune kind of feel, and I can really get down to that. So
you sure can.
Really enjoyed that.
So Shovel Knight's your pick.
Shovel Knight is my pick, yes. Sorry.
Okay. Just
yes.
Making sure Absolutely. That you made that sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Best multiplayer game.
Okay.
And multiplayer, you know, two or more players, you know.
Two more.
Doesn't have to be Battlefield 5 or whatever.
Yeah, whichever one they're playing these days.
Just a couple. So Jake here, he has, of course, the front of his year was just mainly Overwatch.
He wasn't
picking up a lot of games. That's one reason he didn't beat a ton of games, because he put so many hours into Overwatch.
A lot of hours.
That's okay. He had fun with it. Also, PUBG, most recently, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Battlegrounds. Yeah, they put the G as the separate word.
They didn't have to do that. Now, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is also another one on his nominee list here for multiplayer games. Jake, where do you stand?
Oh, this is difficult, right? Because I do love Overwatch. I love the world. I love playing with all my friends. And, you know, it's just a blast to play. Obviously, it's won multiple awards. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you can't go wrong with Mario Kart game. Split screen, sitting around, just zipping around the track, shooting blue shells at each other. It's infuriating. It's fun. Blast to play.
Yep.
However, the winner has to be PUBG for me. And the reason why, it's just unlike anything I've ever played. It's the most surprising, the most dynamic, the most emergent kind of game that I've ever played. It just really took me by surprise by how these just little moments can happen. And it's interesting because it's also dynamic and happening. You know, 100 live players on the map with you. And you see people running around and driving around, and you're stealing their shit or shooting them when they don't know it, or you're getting shot and you have no idea where from because there's no radar to tell you where the bad guys are. And it's just, it's just an interesting concept, obviously being copied by literally everybody. Fortnite, CSGO, a lot of people are copying this Battle Royale formula. I think even Dying Light is going to release a Battle Royale. I was like, what the fuck? Everybody stop. But even though it's sort of in a broken, gross state on the Xbox One, it doesn't break the fun. So it goes there for me, which Overwatch, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be like, you love Overwatch, but play PUBG for a minute and you'll see what I mean.
Nice.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's another surprise for me. I'd have thought that the months you sunk into Overwatch there would overcome that recency of the PUBG, but I stand corrected.
It's just the surprise, you know, because Overwatch, it's kind of predictable. You know what's going to happen eventually. PUBG, you never know.
All right.
All right, and so for you, you have three nominees here for multiplayer as well. Gears of War 4, of course, we love that horde mode.
Mm.
We love that horde mode.
Love it.
Portal 2, another co-op adventure you recently completed, and Orcs Must Die 2. Fairly old game, however, it is one you recently completed with your buddy Josh on PC. I'm going to love that. Trapping them orcs, building them traps, always a blast.
Always a blast. I do quite love Orcs Must Die 2. Also, I love Portal 2. I mean, they're just great games, but I think the amount of fun and the amount of time I've been able to sink into the horde mode of Gears of War 4, you know, is really the reason that it's going to win out here. You know,
Fair enough. Suck
a lot more time into it, and I can also play with more of my friends at once. You can get four or five of us there together and play, and that's one I don't play a lot of multiplayer games, so that's why mine's maybe a little watered down compared to Jake's, but I really enjoy Gears of War 4.
I think it's probably the best horde mode.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, didn't it sort of invented it? Yeah, kind of, yeah.
No, I can agree with that. Sweet.
All right, best indie game. Games developed by, you know, smaller conglomerates, smaller developers. Jake has three here. Cuphead, Tacoma, and Kamiko. Mm. Jake, what was your favorite?
Boy, this is difficult. Loved them all for different reasons. But there can only be one. Mm-hmm. Kamiko is one of those games that just surprised me. $5, great game, great soundtrack. Tacoma, interesting storytelling, love developer from the same people who made Gone Home to Fulbright. And then Cuphead, which is one that has just taken the world by storm, and I'm going to have to go with Cuphead.
Oh, wow.
Even though I haven't finished it, I've sunk enough hours into it to get the aesthetic, to get the gameplay, to understand how well this game is put together. And it's one of those games where the delays feel fully justified. You know, this is a polished product that was not in the slightest bit broken on release, and just came together seamlessly. And it's one of those I plan to dive into in the new year.
Very, very good.
Right. So you have nominees that are not surprising here, considering what you played. You had Gone Home, you have Inside, and you have Cuphead. Now, this is a tough battle here.
It is a tough battle, and I wish I could throw more bones toward Inside, because I did quite love it. It's a close second here, but I got to go with Cuphead.
I have to.
What a fun game. What a fun, beautiful game.
And love it.
Just, you know, a lot of, you know, it's basically a family that made this game, right?
It's a couple of bros, maybe a few other people.
It's astounding.
But I feel like it's like, you know, like bros and in-laws, like it's all like...
Yeah.
Everybody went, kind of...
It's an astounding game for the amount of people that were involved.
I've already sold over 2 million units, so, like, I mean, they're...
They're set. I hope they come back, though. I told them not to stay away long in my tweet. Please come back and make more.
I like it.
Best character of 2017. So this is games that came out in 2017 that we played in 2017. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Persons in the games, characters in the games.
Yeah.
What were your favorites? Jake has he has nominated Bayek of Siwa from Assassin's Creed Origins.
Mm-hmm.
Chloe Fraser from Uncharted Lost Legacy. Mm-hmm. And Swamp Thing from Injustice 2. Yeah. Jake, tell me, who's your favorite here? And if it's not Swamp Thing, I want to know why.
Now, this might seem like an odd pick, but I really loved, like, you know, obviously you don't get a huge amount of narrative in a fighting game. You kind of get those little cutscenes between fights. But I really just love Swamp Thing in general, and getting to see him in a game was awesome, even though it wasn't necessarily my favorite, art, you know, at least art-wise iteration of him. But he's just one of those characters that I always sympathize with, and he had a nice little arc in the game, and getting to fight with him was awesome. Chloe Fraser, hard to not love her. Like, she's just fantastic. Performance just fantastic. And then Bayek of Siwa from one of my favorite games of the year. This is really difficult, but I'm gonna have to go with Chloe from Uncharted Lost Legacy. Just so, the performance was so dynamic. Like, Bayek was good, but didn't always feel for his character, and didn't always identify with him. Great arc. I'm not knocking it. It just didn't impact me the same way that Chloe did.
Interesting. All right.
All right. So for you, you have 2B from Nier Automata. You have Devin Wade from Madden 18, and Senua from Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
Right. So
these are all very different.
They are very different. Each game is obviously very different. 2B, you know, got that sweet cyber tushy.
Gotta love that.
Yes. Not the most emotive character, but a very strong character.
Interesting, right?
In the game. Yeah, very interesting. Nice. I wish there was a little more to it, obviously. I didn't get all the endings. A lot of people will come at me for that because I did not get all the endings. I maybe have no authority on the game, but I think I played enough, honestly. I might come back to it and get a few more, but I played enough certainly to understand 2B's role.
Gotcha.
So there's that. Senua, what amazing thing. You know, I complained that the game fell short in a few ways, but it certainly didn't fall short in character or the character, the way the, you know, everything from the facial animations to her emotions and everything. You really felt it throughout the game. It was very dark and brooding, and you sort of empathize with her after a while. I felt like I was her. It was so, you know, visceral.
Nice.
And Devin Wade, I mean, you can shit on that Madden 18 campaign all you want.
And
but,
you did.
But that character, I felt was very grounded. It was very, you know, I empathized with him quite a bit.
Nice.
Very well acted. And, you know, I'm between that one and Senua. Not because, I mean, I feel like Senua is a more important character and
sure.
certainly handled more emotions. But the Devin Wade character felt more real to me. And well, I think that's what they were going for.
That makes sense.
And so I really liked it. So I'm going to have to go with, I feel shady doing it, but I feel like I got to go with Madden 18's Devin Wade.
That's
in terms
crazy.
Of
crazy.
Just and I surprised myself.
Wild,
here.
Wild picks here on Polykill.
I flipped it there. I talked myself away from
that's
it.
Crazy.
I talked myself away from it.
Do you think you just identify with a young boy with football dreams more than you do with a person suffering some psychosis in ancient Celtic times?
Perhaps.
Maybe.
I think Senua, they probably put more work into that character, and she probably deserves it more. But in terms of like Devin Wade, I made decisions based on what would Devin Wade do, and I feel like it's a good character, you know.
Okay.
Like I really felt for, I really wanted this guy to do okay. So
interesting.
It was cool.
So fun fact about the actress whose name escapes me and I probably couldn't pronounce who played Senua. She's not an actress. She was the video editor at Ninja Theory.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, not even an actress. It's crazy. She's won all kinds of awards, except for Polykill. Polykill can give you an award.
I feel bad.
That's fine.
I almost want to flip it. I feel bad that we put a Madden 18 stamp on something over Hellblade.
That's hilarious.
If you want to stop listening to Polykill because of that, I understand. I'm very sorry. I thought Devin Wade was fine.
Okay.
All right. Now, we're going to... Right. Before we get to our Game of the Year 2017, if you're still with us, God bless you.
Yes, amen.
But we are going to zip through five real quick made-up things, made-up awards without nominees. Zip through them real fast. We're going to call them honorable mentions, but maybe that's not what they are because we've already given some of these an award.
Yeah.
But it's sort of these unique things that we give each game. So I'll zip through mine real quick. An award I'm calling Everyone Should Play This, and that I'm assuming everyone hasn't, is Quackshot starring Donald Duck. I played that on the Genesis. It was right around the wake of my dad passing away. I needed a game that was uplifting and fun. It's very Indiana Jones. It's very Disney. It's very, very beautiful.
Sounds fun.
Everyone should play it. Another award I'm calling I Wish I Had Those Hours Back. It's a game that I hated, also played in the wake of my dad's funeral. Ren and Stimpy, Stimpy's Invention, it might have made the weekend worse for me. It was not a great game. I don't know why I stuck with it. I don't know why I decided that I needed to beat it, but I did beat it. I thought Ren and Stimpy would be fun and funny. It's not. Don't play it.
Okay.
Scared my dick off. Resident Evil 7, I no longer have a penis thanks to this game. I played with my buddy Brian. He no longer has a penis. We're both penisless. It was a great game. Scared my dick off. I can't wait for more Resident Evil. Wow, what a game.
Sweet.
Cuter than the Dickens, Cuphead.
And there's another Cuphead award.
I had to say it again. Yeah. I love Cuphead.
Cuphead.
Beautiful game. Cuter Sweet. Than the Dickens. And then what the fuck did I just play? Bayonetta 2. What the fuck did I just play? What was it?
What was it?
What happened in the game? I have no idea. I beat the game, could not tell you one thing that happened or why it happened.
Sweet. That's awesome. Love it. All right, so here are my five honorable mentions. Some of these are just, I don't know, these are weird. But pre-release hate, post-release love. That is going to be Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
I get it.
Absolutely despise the idea of those two universes crossing over. Played the game, absolutely love that these two universes crossed over. Send Me Right Back to High School award goes to Life is Strange Before the Storm.
The high school you never went to.
Never went to. Yeah, Blackwell High School, or just any of them. I Need to Learn How to Climb award goes to Uncharted 2, Uncharted 3, Uncharted 4, Uncharted Lost Legacy, Rise of the Tomb Raider, and Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
All you do in these games is climb.
Are you want to get into climbing?
No.
Okay.
No, I will not. But good God, all those games you climb. The DOA award, the Dead on Arrival award, goes to Battleborn. Sorry.
Just overshadowed before
just
it came out.
Completely overshadowed by Overwatch.
Mm.
Yeah, it's basically all support has stopped for that game.
Yeah, true that.
It went free to play, and then they just stopped working on it.
Similarly for Blazinski's game, too, right?
Lawbreakers, yeah. You could also say that. Yeah, this game's like $15 now. No one gives a shit, which is kind of a shame. Lastly, an award that I'll give Adolescent Grins to, and that is Ratchet & Clank. Just took me back to being 13 or 14, playing those old PS2 era action adventure, running around, beautiful graphics, just made me happy. Just a lot of fun.
I want more of that. You know, similarly Absolutely. To the Crash trilogy that was re-released and then this, please, more of that. I mean,
yes,
that tickles the nostalgia.
Love it.
Right in the old spot.
Right in the old tickling place.
All right. So, here's the one. Here's the big one.
Well,
Game of the Year.
Drum roll.
Okay. Game of the Year 2017. Of course, these are relegated to games that came out in 2017 that we played in 2017.
Yes.
The one that everybody else is doing. We're doing it too.
We're doing it too. By God.
Jake has nominated. Let me go first. Yours are bigger. Yours are more important, I feel like.
Okay. All right.
Do me first.
All right. I'll do you. All right. So Game of the Year 2017, Trav has nominated three distinct games. He has nominated Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, Resident Evil 7, and Cuphead.
Okay. Do you have a prediction here?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I don't know if it's right, but I have one.
Okay, so coming in at number three would be Hellblade. And I know that surprises you, Jake, because...
You hated it.
I never hated it. I just felt like it, you know, it's not the... it's not particularly a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say that, because it does have moments that are enthralling and compelling.
I don't think this is a game that was designed to be fun, though.
I feel like all games should have something that is fun or something that is gripping or whatever, but it's a slow burn. It eventually gets to a point where it makes you want it. And
okay.
I think that's the interesting thing about the game. Just some of those visuals toward the end, if you started the game like, this isn't for me, make it to hell.
Move on.
And then tell me what you think. It's metal as fuck, as Brian pointed out in his Brizzy Awards. Pretty solid game, but not my favorite. Comes in number three for games released and I played in 2017.
All right, so what's your number one? You have to give us your number one, because you can't kill us number two, because we'll know by default, and then the fan tour will be gone.
I got it. It is.
Okay.
Between Cuphead and Resident Evil 7.
These very wildly different games, but you love them both.
I adore them both.
Do you have a pick? Do you know?
I do.
Okay.
It is Resident Evil
7. Holy shit, I was not expecting that.
It is Resident Evil 7.
Fully expected it to be Cuphead.
So scary, so well written. Having played the original Resident Evil within the last year and then playing this one and also playing 6 in between, I knew what people loved about the series. I knew what people hated about the series immediately.
Right.
And I'm so happy to see it go back to what people love about the series. Very reminiscent of the first one. Well written, very unexpected, but a lot of throwback stuff to some of the old Resident Evil. So
right,
enough
a lot
fan
of people
service.
Wouldn't expect that, given that it shifts perspective to first person. It was in a house with redneck family. But in some ways, I'm hearing that it's more like the first game than many in a long time.
Absolutely is.
That's awesome.
I mean, just the visuals, everything. I mean, some jump scares, some psychological scares. There's some, you know, there's an old lady that terrorizes you in this house. She's in a wheelchair and she's randomly in the house at different parts of the game. I got to where I didn't want to walk by her in the game. I closed my eyes and run past her in the game because I was afraid that any moment she was going to come alive and eat my soul. What a fantastic experience. Obviously, Cuphead number two. I love Cuphead, but I think the memories I got out of Resident Evil 7 will last me a lifetime.
All right.
So that's me.
That's fantastic.
So
right, you congratulations.
You would have picked Cuphead then?
No.
I mean,
I would absolutely expect you to pick Cuphead.
Yeah. So for you, Game of the Year 2017, Jake played a lot of games that came out in 2017, good. But he only finished the ones that I'm going to mention here.
Right. Well, I finished more than that.
You finished more than that, but
my nominees.
Of your nominees, you certainly finished these. So I'm saying this doesn't include Horizon or Persona 5.
Or
some games that you're very
Legends
fond
Zelda
of that you did not complete.
Exactly.
So the nominees that he has listed here is Super Mario Odyssey, a game that we've not mentioned at all.
At all.
At this point.
Crazy.
It absolutely is. Assassin's Creed Origins, obviously we just talked about that a lot today. And What Remains of Edith Finch.
Right.
Where do you stand for your Game of the Year 2017?
Boy, this is wild. It's a wild one. So, number three is going to be What Remains of Edith Finch.
Okay.
That's my number three.
Okay.
Love the game. Surprised by the narrative. It's kind of that adventure game that I love. Not going to beat the dead horse. It's just a great game. So, between these two different games, Super Mario Odyssey, which has been absent from pretty much every nominee.
Yeah, where's that been?
Crazy, right? And then Assassin's Creed Origins. So my Game of the Year 2017 is Super Mario Odyssey.
What?
Yes.
So you're not going to mention, you're going to give it any fodder award. You're just going to...
No, and here's why. This is why. Because first of all, I didn't play any other games like it in 2017. No one probably did. Didn't play any other, you know, platformers, 3D platformers, and there's no really other good place to put this. The interesting thing about Super Mario Odyssey is that there's not one element of this game that sort of stands out to me. Like, the only thing I could say would probably be level design, but it would be kind of weird to have, like, level design of 2017 nominee list. But the game is just, I won't say it's perfect, but everything works together perfectly in this game, if that makes sense. It's not like... the most perfect game I've ever played. I honestly can't think of anything that I strongly dislike about it. It tickled my nostalgia. It made me feel like I was playing Super Mario 64 again, which is honestly the last Super Mario game that I played. It, the music in this game fit so well. Obviously, music was a big part of the marketing for this game with the song that Pauline sings from New Donk City. Having the 2D conversions that, you know, they sort of picked up from Link Between Worlds, kind of using that aesthetic, but like going back to the Super Mario Bros. 1, just being able to use the cap to possess things and jump on and smack things around with, and collecting the power moons and powering up your ship, and then going to these new exciting kingdoms that we've never seen before. Some hilarious encounters. Like, I have a few little gripes I would like to see more of, you know, more like the Bowser kids would have been fun. But they had a new set of villains that you got to fight against. The encounters that you had with Bowser were just, you know, very fun, you know, not overly challenging, but just a lot of fun to figure out. And the ending of that game really just surprised me. It was one of the coolest endings to a Mario game that I've ever played. And it's one that I'll definitely go back to. I've got a lot of moons left to get. A lot of moons left to get. There's over like 800 moons. I have like almost 200. So a lot of places I could go. So there you go. As ACO comes in at number two for me. But Super Mario Odyssey takes the cake. Not a surprise. Not really to me. Was it a surprise to you? Were you surprised?
I was actually more surprised that Super Mario Odyssey didn't win anything else.
Like I said, it was just hard for me to single out something.
Or even get nominated in any other category.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's more of a surprise, but I guess I'm not surprised that you sort of put recency bias on hold and really looked at Super Mario Odyssey and decide that maybe it was the better game.
I really think it was. And just being able to play it on Switch, you know, I started the game docked in TV mode and then finished it eventually in handheld mode on a trip. So just that, you know, transportability was nice, too.
Yeah, the Switch certainly helps.
Take that experience with you.
All right. Well, that does it for our... my favorite episode every year is between this one and maybe the music episodes that we do, which I don't know if we can do anymore because of...
Who knows?
Because, Matt, we're on Spotify, so we might get
flagged
if we do that again. But we have JD to help us out.
Exactly.
So that's been it. So I hope everyone, because this released on New Year's Day, hope everyone is enjoying their 2018 already. Next week, or next episode, we'll be talking about our New Year's resolutions, mm-hmm. all brand spanking New Year's resolutions. We had some big ones last year that... kind of caught on to some folks, and other people are mimicking the ones that we did earlier in the year. So maybe we'll come up with some new and exciting ones next time. Mm-hmm. So once again, thank you for joining us. Share some of your superlatives. What do you think? Come at us with some of this stuff here on Twitter. You can find me. I am at Trav Plays Games.
You can find me on all those meads at the McAxel.
And together we are at Polykill. Facebook.com/Polykill Podcast. You can find us there. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Search Polykill. We don't yet have our own URL. We plan
soon
to one day. Maybe. Who knows? Rate us on iTunes or any service you use. Follow us on Spotify. Go to Polykill.com for all the blogs, videos, and podcasts. Please check out Brian's blogs there at Hokey Briz's blogs. CartridgeClub.org is where you can chat with us there in the forums and check out other fantastic podcasts from around the Cartridge Club and find out the Cartridge Club Game of the Month, which will be Dark Cloud in the month of January. I will be on that episode, so play it and let's talk about it. And send all of your weird, strange, interesting, unique, ridiculous, or absurd news stories that you can find locally, the better, but if not, hey, whatever, it doesn't have to be recent, to polykillpodcast@gmail.com for offkilter14. That's been it. We'll